Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we got a topic that I think it first came up maybe during a game of Commander Clash or during a past podcast, but it's something we've been talking about for a minute, and we're finally going to do, and that is cards that overshadow your deck. So these are the cards that I think Phil put it really well when we were talking about it. It's like, after you play the game of Commander and you win with this card, you're kind of like, did I really win with my deck? Or did I just win with that one card? Did they overshadow everything that actually you're going to is trying to do? And I think these are cards that are important to consider when you're deck building, because these are a lot of cards that I wouldn't say you should never play these cards, but there are cards that I think twice before putting in my deck. And I think, do I really need this card? Like, is it actually serving a purpose with the theme of my deck? Or am I just playing this because it's super busted and it's actually going to make the theme and the flavor of my deck worse in the long run because this card's just going to overshadow everything else? So those are the cards that we're going to talk about today. But before we get into that, we got a crew to introduce, kicking things off with Phil. How's it going today, Phil?
Hey, all. I play some of these cards, but at least I'm sometimes ashamed.
Yeah, I mean, there's one of these cards in specific that I play all the time, and I'm still not really ashamed about it.
But I wonder which one it is.
I'm sure Tomer will let us know shortly. Speaking of Tomer, good morning, Tomer. How are you? Or evening. You're in the EU. Good evening, Tomer. How are you?
Yes. Good night to you, too. I'm doing very well. It's interesting because I think we're all going to have kind of differing opinions, because I see there's like a bunch of ones that you're going to be bringing up that I think is totally fine. And there's probably ones that I'm going to be bringing up that you think is totally fine. So it's like, it's okay to disagree. These are kind of like personal opinions, not like an attack on anybody who plays these cards. Like, we all just try to enjoy Commander differently, and some of us enjoy different things. That's totally fine.
I think the big lesson is not so much like you should or shouldn't play specific cards, but I think the lesson I hope people take from this is just like, when you're building a Commander deck, be conscious of your card choices, because you might be thinking you're just playing a card because it's good, and it might actually be making, in a weird way, your deck worse if your goal is to like do a cool thing with a certain commander or whatever. You might be actually making it worse by playing these cards rather than better, but again, I'm getting ahead of myself. We got one more co-host in Krim. Krim, I know it's morning where you're at. Good morning, Krim. How are you today?
I am like 3 seconds removed from waking up and getting out of my bed.
So typical podcast, yeah.
I'm about to go to bed.
I'm doing great. And
a 9-hour difference.
You're all getting ready to go to bed, so don't worry. We'll have a good time. We'll see if we can wake you up before bed, because we're going to have a nice little discussion about some cards. And some of these cards I feel I'm going to disagree with. And like Tomer said, I'm excited to chat about that.
There's going to be some debate on this one, I think. But before we get to that, we got a couple of sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way amenity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever. And you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGOLD Fish to get 15% off. Our show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use a curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of $1 or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use our sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results in a fast payment when your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to our sponsors for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So last week, we talked about weird ways to ramp in Commander. And our top comment comes from JD last name 1014, says, "The crew's relation to fun in Commander. Seth and Morgan, everyone should have fun. Tomer, my opponents will have fun and I will suffer. Richard, fun is irrelevant. I grind like it's a pro tour. Krim, fun is irrelevant for you. Phil, I'm too busy building the perfect engine to think about fun."
That's the fun, though.
That is the fun. I think that actually describes the group relatively well. I think you nailed it, JD last name. Anyway, let's talk about cards that overshadow your deck. And I kind of already explained what we're going for with this one. Again, it's not that you shouldn't play these cards, but maybe they could be too good in some decks and make your deck less exciting and less fun rather than more fun. And let's start with you, Tomer. Tomer, what do you got for us for a card that overshadows or could overshadow your deck?
All right. I was going to save this for later, but why not start off the hot take right now? Sol Ring. It's in every deck. It's in the precons. And there's, I think it's kind of fine sometimes, especially if you're like a low power table and stuff, and you're like powering out low power cards. I think it's fine. However, if you're like aiming for like a bracket two or bracket three, and you have like a really, really powerful commander, that's like usually the big one. It's like a really powerful commander that's like a really strong engine, especially like a draw engine. Like I'm thinking like Kefka or whatever. I feel like a turn one Sol Ring kind of overshadows the entire deck. Also, like the entire gameplay experience, in my opinion.
I've
very often seen like, let's say so, like, very recently. Sorry, Rodrigo, I'm calling him out. Let's say you play your Kefka and you go like turn one Sol Ring into a Signet, and then you go like Kefka on turn two or whatever. It's so much value that it's very difficult for the entire table to even like keep up with it. And then the entire game is now warped around the fact that you had the Sol Ring start. And the entire race is basically to see, can we stop the Sol Ring player from just like snowballing into that win? And I feel like both outcomes of that is kind of bad, where like either you shut down the person who was snowballing, and then they're basically out of the game because you have to wreck them so hard to make sure they'll never get up again. Or they just like snowball successfully, swipe away your stuff. Maybe they have a fierce guardianship to back it up or something like that. And they just win after like a very agonizing like six turns or so of us like feebly trying to stop them. And I don't know. I feel like Sol Ring has always been like, how always has that ability to just like turn into these like very like lopsided games out of nowhere. And I feel like it's just like a net negative, you know? It's like the upside is that you can have a turn one Sol Ring, I guess, but then the outcome's really bad. And then what's the downside? I don't know. I feel like it's just like, I never seen people be like, wow, that Sol Ring start was so
fun. A great game.
That made the game made the game so much better. I guess I'm like also coddled by the fact that like in Clash we don't have it for so long.
Yeah, that is.
But I like it. I like not dealing with it.
That is a card we have house banned. I'll say like, it's hard for me to think of Sol Ring as being a card that overshadows your deck, because I feel like it only lets your deck do the thing it was already trying to do, right? Like if you're a Kefka deck, you're like trying to play Kefka. Yeah, if you have Sol Ring, you played a couple turns earlier, but you're still doing the thing. I feel like Sol Ring overshadows the entire game. It's not so much that it has like an impact of overshadowing your deck, is overshadowing the game for the entire table, because everyone, it goes through what you were talking about, where like someone's arch enemy, you got to take them out or you lose to them. So I feel like it's in some ways even worse than overshadowing your deck, because it's even bigger picture than that. But I'm curious, what do you think on this, Phil?
So I'd say it turbocharges your deck, which kind of lets it do what it's doing more. But then again, this will be very hypocritical if we talk about Rhystic Study and Smothering Tide, because they are on this
they're
list
also
multiple
doing the same
times.
Thing. Yeah.
And they are kind of just super charging your deck. Like you draw more cards off your deck, or you get more mana to cast your deck. I started mulliganing the Sol Ring if I draw it on turn one in paper, unless I'm in a high power table, because it lopsides the game. But I guess that's kind of true for half of these cards. The other ones are like two easy finishers, but then like Smothering Tide is just kind of the same as Sol Ring. So
we'll get there.
I don't want to sound hypocritical, like, oh, Sol Ring doesn't overshadow your deck. I get what you mean. I guess it should be a game changer. That would be funny.
I mean, it definitely should be.
It won't happen.
Or just straight up banned. But Krim, go ahead, Chomer.
Yeah. No, I just like to clarify my opinion on cards that overshadow your deck. I'm very like critical of cards that are very generic. If they're like generic and they do things too well for your deck, then I feel like that can overshadow what your deck's doing, because decks are usually like in Commander synergy piles, themes and stuff. So I'm very more lax if like you have a very powerful card, but it only as powerful in like your archetype or whatever. Mm-hmm. You have to like build your deck to abuse that card. I have no problem if a card is like incredibly powerful, but only in the case of like an archetype. But then when it's like a generic card and it just does the thing really well, and that's when I feel like it overshadows it. That's why I think like a Sol Ring or some other examples later kind of overshadow it, because it's like, okay, you just played a card that everybody runs and it kind of won you the game.
I think that makes sense.
So that's where I'm at with these.
Where are you at on Sol Ring, Grim?
I mean, look, we've definitely talked about Sol Ring a plenty of times on this channel. And I'm going to kind of just agree, though, like it does supercharge what you're already doing. And that, I don't know, maybe I've gotten used to it by now, but like I personally don't care about Sol Ring anymore, just because it's one of those things that it's so obviously busted that whatever happens afterwards, it's kind of a blur. So it's just like, sure. You know what I mean?
I guess that's kind of an example of overshadowing your deck. And if everything afterwards a blur, then yeah, I guess that kind of qualifies.
But like Sol Ring in specific is kind of like a blur, right? This is one of those ones where I feel like fast mana and like any game where, okay, yeah, you get to Kefka and you may have beaten me down with Kefka, but how did you get to Kefka on turn two? That is not when Kefka is supposed to come down. Or like when I play, I don't know, imagine I just drop some 7-drop commander. Is this not Jeweled Lotus, right? The same problem is like Jeweled Lotus down and then I play some absurdly high-costed commander and I win the game on like turn two essentially. You know what I mean? Like, your deck didn't really do the thing, right? Your deck just like played fast mana and got to the whatever and it wouldn't have mattered what you got to.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with it.
Yeah, I think Sol Ring is definitely a card that I have found games to generally be more fun without. But let's keep moving on. We got more cards to get to. Phil, what do you got for a card that overshadows your deck?
Okay, I got something very different. So it is Defense of the Heart. And the funny story is, I think we all know the card, but Richard, almost a year ago now, posted in the group chat an image of this card and said, hey, why don't we play this? Isn't this like very good? And we all just said, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's 4 mana during your upkeep. If one of your opponents controls 3 or more creatures, so almost by default, sacrifice the Defense of the Heart, search your library for up to 2 creature cards, put them on the battlefield, then shuffle your library. So 4 mana next turn. Please win the game, at least. That's kind of the problem with this. You double tutor, so you get a Kiki combo or something, and then you win, and you did nothing for it. Kind of similar to Emergent Ultimatum, where I just hope that you just kill me with this. Yeah. And then it's over, and then I say, yeah, you kind of just cast this card. And then it was kind of like Insurrection as well. Oh, that's also on here. Spoiler alert. But yeah. And that is the cards where you say, although Insurrection at least needs a board or something, Defense of the Heart, I guess, also needs a board, but just 3 creatures. And it's just like double tutor is so much against the spirit of the format. And then to the battlefield, then if people just search their library and say, oh, I'm looking for something. No. Please at least look for your 2-card combo and kill me. I can say, your deck didn't win. This card won.
So this is obviously an incredibly supercharged tutor, right? Yeah, there's a little setup. You need creatures. You got to wait to your upkeep. But when it works, 2 creatures directly into play is absurd. I'm curious what you guys think about tutors in general. Are tutors cards that overshadow your deck? Or I go back and forth on this, because on one hand, I feel like they are kind of against the spirit of the format. But then, like, I don't know. I played that. Well, is the Vecna deck going to be up by the time we do this? I played a deck recently that was all about assembling 3 different cards and putting them together. And in a deck like that, I felt like playing a lot of tutors was actually making my deck more thematic, because I actually would have some chance I'd find, like, Tomer, you're kind of the classic example of this with Cauldra pieces. Like, you're trying to assemble Cauldra. Is tutoring up Cauldra making your deck more or less flavorful? Are you overshadowing your deck by playing a bunch of tutors, or are you just helping it do its thing? I'm curious what you think of tutors in this context.
I think, like, as a person playing against it, I think it's totally fine. The reason why I personally stay away from tutors and not like a power issue or like it's overshadowing, but rather I find like if your deck is like trying to find the same cards over and over again, the repeat entertainment factor goes down heavily. Like for me, I like the novelty of 99 card singleton because oftentimes I won't draw, like I won't see certain cards in my deck for like months at a time because I generally don't run that many tutors. And that's really, it's kind of fun to see the variance of what I'm drawing at any given time. And I like that. And I used to have a Cauldre deck that had a lot of tutors and tried to assemble Cauldre as quickly as possible. But I found it a little bit, I found that I personally got bored of it. But like, I think if somebody else is like running a lot of tutors, that doesn't really bother me any which way. I will say for defense, though, I feel like this card's kind of overrated. I don't think it's very good, actually.
Holy.
Because the reason why, it's four mana, it's an enchantment, and I think the reason why everybody kind of like just stopped playing it is because it gives your opponents basically the entire turn cycle of them getting ready to deal with you or slash dealing with you. It's kind of like the doubling season issue, right? Like you drop down doubling season and you say pass. Everybody now has to kill you because if you untap with that doubling season, you're going to play like a planeswalker, immediately ultimate, and probably win the game, right? Same thing with the Defense of the Heart. You know, like everybody's going to be like, okay, if the Defense of the Heart goes off, it's going to be two creatures, probably a game-winning board state. We have to deal with this. So either the enchantment has to get destroyed or somebody tries just, they, everybody just agrees, let's kill Tomer, you know? You played Defense of the Heart, let's everybody just gang up, kill Tomer before it resolves, or wipe the board, you know?
Yeah.
And then try to, and then you're still the threat. As long as that's on the battlefield, you're still a threat. That's why, like, I think more, like, emergent ultimatum, stuff like that, much, much more powerful,
yeah,
because
kinda,
it's like,
yeah.
I cast it, and it happens. Like, what are you gonna do about it? That's why I think defense is like, it's okay.
Yeah, defense is kind of just like a do nothing, like until like, or not a do nothing, but it definitely is inviting everyone to absolutely come and obliterate your game plan. Which I don't know. I mean, like this card is kind of nuts if you get to go tutor the two cards,
oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like obviously, but I don't know. I don't. I'm not a fan of this card either. But I just think it's because it automatically gets whatever combo you want. And I am in the camp where I think tutors, if all you've done all game is tutor, then like you're probably going to win, right? Like you're 100% going to win. And like there's no variance in the 100 card singleton format. And I don't know. I don't really, I'm not a fan of that either. So I'm very much so anti-tutor. And I think we've known that. So I'm. This is going to just be more of that, and except it's an even more busted tutor because you put them onto the battlefield.
Well, let's keep moving on. Krim, what do you got for your first pick for cards that overshadow your deck?
I think this is one that we've all dealt with, especially, you know, when we played it against it in Standard, and then it got banned. And then, you know, we've kind of soft banned it on the channel, but Field of the Dead. Field of the Dead enters tapped, add a colorless. Whenever Field of the Dead or another land enters the battlefield under your control, if you control seven or more lands with different names, create a 2/2 zombie creature token. As we've learned, this is like zero build around, right? Like you legitimately in the current year, you just take a game action, you generate a body. And there is nothing needed to real, like even in a monocolor deck, we've seen Richard do it where very easily, by the way, where this just gets online super fast and over the game, no matter what happens, you're just rewarded for taking a basic game action. And I think that this card will always just be whatever your game plan is. It is now overshadowed by the fact that just there is a nonstop, constant horde of zombies. Now, the one time you'll catch me playing this is in my Evil Dead deck because it is literally Cabin of the Dead and it is about that, right? So that works there. And that is the only deck I play this land in. Otherwise, I don't know. I think it's just too annoying. It's too, I just don't like cards that for the most part will just reward you for taking basic game actions.
I think this card's like the perfect example of what we're talking about, actually. Like, this card's like exactly what I think of as a card that can overshadow your deck. In a lot of decks, if you just play this for value in a random deck, we saw this is why I ended up getting Housebanned on Commander Clash eventually, is we saw it just like take over so many games in decks that had nothing to do with being a landfall deck, nothing to do with being a zombie deck. It was just like, I'm just playing this as a utility land. Oops, I won because I made all these zombies. So I think that's where it really overshadows your deck. But I also think this is a good example of why even cards that can overshadow your deck, I think are fine in the right deck. In a zombie deck, where like that's my goal is to be like zombies or a zombie token themed deck, I'm perfectly fine with this card. Then I think it would actually fit the theme and the flavor of my deck very well and would be worth playing. But what do you, Phil and Tomer, think on this one?
You're muted.
Is Phil muted? I can't hear you, okay. Phil. I think you're muted.
Oopsie. So I played in multiple decks, but I have a reason, like with Manios Kalgai, draw a card.
Yeah. You have Caretaker's Tale in every deck, Phil. Of course, you have a reason.
It is. It's also in Necrobloom is a Field of the Dead, so I have to play another field, right? And then the other one is, I think, in Omnath, which is high power landfall. Oh, it actually has the Cabin of the Dead as well. Good thing I bought this cheaper than it is now, but
yeah,
this card is just insane, and I'm very happy that we banned it on Clash. We kind of, so Richard, the comment of the week kind of described this. Richard started playing it because it's optimal, and we all just said, if you don't need it, maybe don't play it, but it is technically optimal to play it in every deck, I think.
And except for Tomer decks.
I was about to say, this card is stone cold unplayable in my decks. I don't know how you guys keep managing it. No, but seriously, like I played it like I have a meta where Field of Dead is played very regularly. I do think it's like kind of pushing just generic value engine because it's like it just rewards you for having lots of money, basically. Like if you have just like an optimized land base, you can just jam it in and there's no building around, there's just generic value. And again, I'm not a fan of those, and they can overshadow the deck a little bit.
And
that's why basically that's why I run red in all my decks. There's also like it's how hard it is to find spot removal in just your average deck. Like, yes, there are like Strip Mine and Demolition Field and stuff like that, but like I don't know, I feel like Field, I've been pushed more and more towards playing red decks because red seems to be the best suited to dealing with those strategies. And so I keep ending up in red, and maybe that's not healthy, but yeah.
Well, let's keep moving on. I got a good one. This one I think might rustle some jimmies, I think is Tomer put it. And this is a new card, maybe the newest card we've talked to, new-ish card. Deadpool Trading Card. We've seen this one. I see Krim smiling over there. We see this one a lot on Clash because Krim loves this card. And the more I've gotten to play against this card, and I've played with it a little bit, the more I've started to feel like it often does end up being a card that overshadows your deck. So if you don't know Deadpool, it's 4 mana Rakdos 5/3. When it enters, you exchange this text box with another creature's text box. And that text box is, at the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 3 life, and you can pay 3 and sack it to have each other player draw a card. So the thing about Deadpool is, Deadpool just, like, showing up once is kind of okay. Like, it's kind of like a weird, annoying removal spell. But normally when you see Deadpool, it's getting, like, copied or blinked or, like, trying to do the Deadpool thing, which is give everything its text box. And there's been quite a few games, well, maybe not quite a few, but several games, where I've come away from a game where Deadpool shows up feeling like, yeah, that was really just a Deadpool game. Like, nothing else that anyone was doing really kind of mattered because it just all came down to what Deadpool was doing. But I'm curious specifically what you think, Krim, because you love this card. Have you found it to be, like, overshadowing at all? Obviously, if it's your commander and you're building around it, 100% fine. It's not overshadowing its own deck. But, like, in the 99 when you're not built around Deadpool, have you experienced that at all, or am I off base on this one?
If I am in Rakdos, I have this card. Right? Like, and it's because, but for me, I don't think it overshadows the game just because this is going to sound biased because obviously, right? But it's a removal spell. It's a removal spell. Is it really? Like, yeah, it's a removal spell that gets around maybe like Hexproof or whatever, sure, right? But the main thing here is I play this as no better than an updated 2025 Oubliette. right? Like, I may be able to take out your commander. Actually, it's not even an oubliette because oubliette keeps it locked down until you remove it. You have the option to free your commander of this or whatever. So for me, I don't even try to clone this. I just play it generically. And oftentimes, when people ask me, like, if we were to do the mental breakdown of, like, where cards fall, this is not registered as a creature in my head. This is registered as spot removal. This is interaction for me. And
okay.
And so that is why I don't to me, it doesn't overshadow anything, because would you say that a Doomblade overshadows it, right? This Doomblade that like or a Ravenous Chupacabra. So, yes, it's a stronger version of those cards, but at the end of the day, that's all it is to me. And maybe I steal something. So it's like a 4-mana clone and Ravenous Chupacabra combined together. And that's all it is. So I don't think so, unless you view those cards as something that would also overshadow a deck, just like interaction and spot removal.
I mean, that's a fair point. What do you think, Tomer?
I think it's totally fine if it's just you do a Deadpool once and that's it. My personal experience is I feel like oftentimes there is a little bit of build around, even if not intentionally, like because it's a creature compared to like a Doomblade or an Oubliette. It means that it's easy to reanimate in Rakdos colors. Also in Rakdos colors, it's really easy to copy it and start cloning it with like the red, like Kiki, not Kiki, but you know, like Electro Duplicate and stuff like that. And then it starts getting kind of obnoxious. Because
how is that different though than cloning a Ravenous Chupacabra?
Well, because it doesn't target. So it gets around like Hexproof 4, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, then the commander's like, if it's a commander, usually it's shutting down commanders. Then the commander's not in the command zone. Then the person who has a commander has to now pay 3 mana just to put it back in the command zone and then recast the commander. So I feel like if it was just like you target, I wouldn't have an issue with it. If it was just like you can sacrifice for 0 mana instead of paying 3 mana, I would also not have an issue with it, even though I think that would still be incredibly strong, because you're giving each of your opponents also a card draw on top of that. it's just like a perfect storm of like, it's so much value. It's such a good removal spell. And then it's attached to a creature. If it was also like an instant or sorcery, I still wouldn't have an issue with it, because it would be a little bit more difficult to reuse over and over again. But the fact that it's a creature, it's getting around Hexproof and Shroud and Ward, and the freaking commander can't even go back to the command zone to be recast. You have to pay 3 mana first and give your opponents a card. I feel it's very good. If it's like a one and done thing, no problem with it. But then as soon as it starts getting copied and stuff, then I'm like, ugh. I mean, guess I just can't have my commander out ever.
you are right that like it's a good card, right? No one's gonna debate whether or not it's good or bad. But I mean, it still just sounds like a good removal spell.
But I just want to play my commander.
Yeah, I want to play magic. I want to play magic. Where are you?
I just want to.
Where are you?
Just swords it, please. And then I have a chance to play it again later.
I know you've been on the receiving end of this, Phil. Where are you at with that?
Oh, yeah, Phil.
Yeah, so the biggest problem for me is that it's always my commander that gets stolen.
Yep.
I think the worst one was Sephiroth and then dying to my own stairwell.
I forgot about that.
I kind of agree with Crim's arguments, but I also agree with Seth. So I'm not sure. It is kind of just a remover, but maybe it's such a brutal remover. I don't know. Is it worse than theft? Kinda.
I think it's really. It really comes down to what Tomer said, where it's just like the reusability is the thing. Like one shot Deadpool, no problem. But once it just seems like most of the games where I see it ends up being reused and reused. Or I mean, if it's one shot, I feel like it's not that much different than a mind control, or like there's a bunch of different effects that could like theoretically be similar removal that you could play. But once you start doing it again and again and again, that's where it becomes like kind of overshadowing, I think, for me.
But like even in the game where like my Venom deck, I just put him down as a permanent because he's his Venom puts permanents in play. And then it's a removal spell, right? So to me, it is used as a Ravenous Chupacabra. Not my fault that Richard wanted to copy it, okay? Like, that's not on me, okay?
I think the reason why it's worse than stealing is usually when you steal something, you deal with the stolen thing, then you can recast it. But in this case, you deal with your own commander and the opponent still has your thing, just killing you with it.
Yeah. <It's>,
but you are left with a beefy body.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, let us know in the comments where you're at on Deadpool. But we got to keep moving on so we get through some more cards. Tomer, let's go back to the top of the order. What do you got for us?
Okay. Seth, yes. This is the intervention for you. We had the intervention for Krim.
It's a removal
that
spell.
That was a little card. Well, this is a card draw spell and a protection spell. It's called the One Ring. I don't know if you've heard of this little underrated gem. It's 4-mana colorless legendary artifact, indestructible. When it enters, if you cast it, you gain protection from everything. Not until end of turn, until the end of your next turn. And then you lose some life. You can tap it, draw ever-increasing amounts of cards. We all know this card is very good. Got banned in Modern for a reason. The fact that it's colorless means it shows up in every deck. And the other nice thing about this card, I would say nice, sarcasm nice, is that because it's colorless, you can literally put it in every deck. And if you put it in any deck, it gets better. So therefore, why not just put it in every deck? I'll tell you why. Because it's incredibly boring. And as soon as you put it down, it doesn't really matter what your deck was doing. All you do is like, I played the One Ring. Oh, I guess I'm immune to everything. Oh, I get to draw cards for free. Generic value, dot deck. And then I don't care what your deck was doing. I don't care. Because you played the One Ring. You could have just not, but you did.
Let me defend the One Ring for a second.
All right.
I actually agree with you to some extent that I do think the One Ring can overshadow decks. I think I've definitely seen games where it happens, where it is the only card that ended up mattering during a game. And I think that's the definition of overshadowing a deck. But if I want to go from it from the other side, how is it different than, I'm going to use the Krim argument with Ravenous Chupacabra. How is it different than, a Painful Truce? Don't you have card draw effects that you play in every deck because every deck needs to draw cards? Isn't this just a really good version of whatever card, pick your favorite card draw effect that shows up in a lot of decks, Mind's Eye. Let's go with Mind's Eye 10 years ago or something. Play it in every deck because you need a way to draw cards, and this is the best way to do it, and every deck needs to draw cards.
Does Mind's Eye also give me a full turn of cycle?
Yeah.
We've seen how good that is. Even if you read it and you're like, oh, wow, immunity for an entire cycle, that's good. It's better than that because we've seen it time and time again. Somebody drops the One Ring because they're like, oh, I don't want to get hit for 50 damage. And then the person who has 50 damage is like, well, I want to hit the person with the One Ring. I have this 50 damage lying around, and then they feel like, oh, I need to hit something.
And then Tomer
dies.
Ring,
they stop me, and then they just do the 50 damage to someone else. So it's almost like instead of just immunity for you, it also just deals damage to your opponents, even if your opponents didn't want to hit you. They wanted to hit you, but they deal for no reason. And we could just not hit each other and deal with the One Ring player. But instead, it's very much like, oh, I have this damage. I need to punch somebody. It's very good.
It is very good.
This is much, way different than I think, a power crept spot
it's painful
removal.
Painful truce.
Right?
Can you imagine this? Painful Truce just took an entire turn of this immunity.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would run that in every deck.
And it's reoccurring,
oh, wait,
by the
way. Oh, this is colorless. Yeah, it's colorless? Yeah. Oh, wow.
You get to keep drawing. You draw forever and for days. I don't know, man. The card is very good.
Oh, the card's busted.
Yo, I'm an artifact. It's an artifact. Synergies. No! Just don't.
I mean, I played in Mishra.
I played... My deck synergizes with card draw. Literally every single deck
that's
I made
why I played
synergizes
in every deck.
With card draw and not dying. So maybe I should put in all decks because of synergy. No.
Welcome to my
here.
World, Tomer. Welcome to my here. Deck building strategy.
I mean, the ring is kind of the embodiment of this theme. I guess Field of the Dead also, but the ring is
Yeah.
It's so generically powerful. And That said, I still play it. If I might also want to house ban it, but if not,
I will also I say the one place I will 100% admit, I do think it can overshadow decks just on its own, but we've definitely seen games where it starts getting Phyrexian Metamorphed and copied and the protection starts going on for multiple turns. And I think in those situations, it is for sure overshadowing your deck. Like once you end up at that point where it's just like, oh, I bounce a ring and replay it and I have protection again and I copy and I have protection again. Nothing else you're doing really matters, right? The only thing that actually matters in that game is the one ring. So I do, even as a one ring defender to some extent, I will admit it is. It does kind of overshadow your deck sometimes. And maybe it'll get house banned next season for Commander Clash. We're going to be talking about that in a couple hours. But let's keep moving on. Phil, what's another overshadowing card?
All right. Another card that overshadows your deck. This one I do admit I play in a lot of decks because it just does a lot very good. Although Thomas said if it's just good in a certain archetype or in an archetype, I'm kind of disprove this here. It's Wizard Lord High Artificer. It is 2 mana and 2 blue, and it comes with a construct. Mostly irrelevant, and the only real relevant thing is tap an untapped artifact you control, add blue. So, I don't know, you can play it in any artifact deck. You can also play it in Lowness with clues. It just adds an unreasonable amount of mana, creates an unreasonably big token. It's an ETB, you can get it back. It also, that's kind of the most egregious thing about the card design. For 5 mana, you also shuffle your library, then exile the top card. Until end of turn, you may play this card without paying its mana cost, so for some reason, it has the win condition
That's
built
fine.
In. If you somehow get the infinite mana, I have to admit, even though I played in, I think, 3 decks, it's just insanely powerful. And sometimes it just feels bad to just say, I guess I'll play Urza, and now I have this huge turn, and hopefully I win, because otherwise, it's very rude.
I feel like this is another really good example of a card that can overshadow your deck, especially, again, not as your commander. If you're building an Urza deck, of course, like you're going to be an Urza deck. But in the 99, it's so tempting in any artifact deck that has blue to be like, oh, I'll just throw in Urza, right? Like, it's going to be like a ramp spell. It's going to be like, it's going to just do everything. It makes a big creature.
It's just a little guy.
But that's just a little guy. Yeah, it's just a little guy. Just make a little mana. But then it ends up just taking over the game. And if you were trying to be like, whatever, a Brea deck or a Mishra deck or an Emery deck or a Leonardo da Vinci deck or choose an artifact commander that's in blue, and you end up with an Urza deck by accident almost, just by putting it in your deck and it popping off. So I definitely agree with this one. What do you think, Tomer and Grim, on this one?
You know, okay, in an artifact deck, I know it's going to pop off. I'm not surprised here. But I'm actually going to say that Urza, if you are not like a Urza commander deck, I don't know. It seems okay, right? Like, am I wild for this? Like, I don't think it overshadows your deck. Because here's why. And this is more of a reflection on the archetype than the card itself. Artifacts are all busted. Everything in your artifact deck is busted. There is no difference between busted artifact 1 and busted artifact 2, right?
It's all the same.
It is all the same broken piece in the same broken machine. So I do not view it any different than anything else you're doing, because unfortunately, you're still an artifact deck, so I don't care.
I'm with Krim, actually. Well, I think some artifact decks are fine.
Okay, tell me.
Don't hurt me, please.
Call
but I actually think it's totally fine, because it's like, if I'm in a generic blue deck, am I going to throw an Urza? No. And if I'm in an artifact deck, I expect, you know, if you're playing artifacts, I expect you to have that Urza and then a 99 at some point. If we're playing bracket 3 or higher, because it is a game changer. If we're bracket 2, I expect it not to be there, hopefully, because that would go from like, ooh, we're chilling out and be like, oh my God, red alerts. But like, I don't know. Personally, when I see like cards that overshadow decks, like I assume an artifact deck is going to have some really, really wildly powerful payoffs. And this is one of them. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think for me personally, like, I definitely agree it's an incredibly powerful card, but it's only an artifact and it's just like, it's a payoff for your artifact deck. So, personally, I think it's fine if you're like bracket three or higher.
We'll come back to this argument. I kind of agree, but there's another card on this list that might test the strength of this argument.
Let's going to disagree.
Let's put it out there, Phil. What is it? Let's just do it. What's the other good?
Six Mastery is kind of just good.
Yeah. Oh, we're getting to the world of red cards. Oh, these are I know you had these on your list. What is Mizzix Mastery in Underworld Breach?
The worst. They are like these cards are way different, right? Like, yes, I mean Spell Slinger, all of that, yada yada yada. Spell Slinger decks play these, right? But I have seen tons of people play Mizzix Mastery outside of that, right? Just because overloading
really?
All your... Like, to let all the listeners know, Mizzix Mastery, 3 and a red, exile target card that's an instant or sorcery from your graveyard for each card exiled this way, copy it, and you may cast the copy without paying its mana cost. Exile Mizzix Mastery. But it has overload for 5 and triple red. And while we're on it, let's just bring up, because that was on my list, and I've got another card that goes right in that, right with it, you know? It's Underworld Breach. We all know it. We all, I guess, love it. 1 in a red enchantment. Each non-land card in your graveyard has escape. The escape cost is equal to the card's mana cost plus 3 other cards from your graveyard. These two cards I've seen played generically just in so many games, and I have played so many fun games where the opponent worked so hard. They were doing so many cool things. And they're like, oh, well, what happens if, like, you know, somebody, like I don't know, kills that piece of whatever artifact or maybe mills a spell or discards something, right? And they're like, oh, simple. I just use Underworld Breach. And I'm just like, oh.
It's a red Eternal Witness. Didn't you know, Krim?
Yeah. This is just an Eternal Witness, right? No, it's so much more. Oh. These cards overshadow. These are like peak. It doesn't matter. Every decision you made outside of like how many cards did you get in your graveyard or throw away is the only action you had to take, right? Because at the end of the game, I think this is just one of those things where I'm going to play this also for an absurdly cheap price at like is it like 2 mana? And then I'm just going to win right then and there. It's usually just I'm going to win.
I feel like Season 17 or 16 of Commander Clash was a great example of this, especially for Underworld Breach, where Richard went through his, like, I'm going to build red decks this season phase, and so many of his different decks, different themes, they just all happen to be red, but some would be, like, artifact decks, some would be aggro, some would be more ramp decks, but so many games ended with some sort of, oh, I drew an Underworld Breach, I'm going to loot mana, guys, or I made all the mana, now I kill you with something. It just overshadowed everything else the deck was trying to do, and it just always felt like, no matter what his commander was, oh, it was just another Underworld Breach win, right? It doesn't matter what your commander was. It was just Underworld Breach that did it. So I think the Underworld Breach is huge like that. And I think Mizzix Mastery, maybe not quite as bad just because it's not as heavily played as Underworld Breach is. Like, I feel like it's a little bit narrower, but it still has an effect. And I've noticed myself cutting it from a lot of decks when I used to play it in the past just because it kind of does feel unfun almost to win with. It feels too easy to win with when you end up overloading and just cast your whole graveyard. And I'm just like, oh, and I don't know. Why did I even bother building this deck? I should have just tutored up and cast Mizzix Mastery. But yeah. What do you think, Tomer?
I think these are both very fine asterisks. So Mizzix Mastery, I think, is like, again, I think this is like totally fine. Krim said that he sees them outside of like Spellslinger decks, and maybe, I don't know, I've never tried it outside of Spellslinger decks, but I feel like if I'm not Spellslinger, I don't think I would ever be interested in running it personally. And then Underworld Breach, I think, is actually a fine card if you don't have the fast mana, because you mentioned Mana Geyser. I think Mana Geyser is the problem. I think Mana Geyser, the fast mana rituals, when you have those paired with Breach, that's when it's not good. But if you like just like Beach and you don't have any rituals, then you're what? You're gonna like, you pay 2 mana and you get like, I don't know, you have 6 mana left and you like cast 2 spells or something. It's like, okay, whatever.
Let me ask you something, Tom. Have you ever seen someone just use a Yogg's Will to play like 1 or 2 cards? from their graveyard.
Yeah, but like, I also think Yogg-Will is fine too if you don't have the rituals. Like, if the rituals are not there, it's the rituals that are a problem. I feel like the rituals are the issue and not the thing by themselves. Because if you take out the rituals, and you have like 6 mana to work with and you cast like 2 to maybe 3 spells, I don't think that's actually a big deal at all.
Yeah. What do you think, Phil?
I agree with so that doesn't count for mastery, but Underworld Breach is kind of only good if you have rituals, because otherwise it's just 1 or 2 Eternal Witness triggers.
But
Mizzix Mastery just casts your... We have multiple spells like this that it's also tough to resolve in paper. And you kind of tell the table that this is most likely going to end, but we're going to do some math or something here and going to resolve this whole thing. And then it's, I don't know. I think both of them fit the criteria of overshadowing your deck, though.
So back to the Underworld Breach for a minute, Tomer, and your point about rituals, which I think is a good one. When I was making my list for this episode, I had Underworld Breach, and the next card I added was Mana Geyser, because I kind of view them in tandem a little bit. But I'm curious. I know it sounds good to be like, oh, Underworld Breach is fine without rituals, but I feel like if you're playing Mono Red, aren't you just accidentally going to play Mana Geyser because it's like your best way to make a bunch of mana? So I feel like that's what happened with Richard's decks. Like, I don't think Richard set out to be like, oh, I'm going to try to combo Mana Geyser and Underworld Breach. I think he set out to be like, I'm going to make a good red deck. Oh, Underworld Breach and Mana Geyser are both good red cards. And then they just both end up in the hand or the graveyard at the same time. And next thing you know, Richard is taking a 20-minute turn and winning the game out of nowhere.
But yeah, I think it's like you could just not, though. Like, for example, I remember there was one time I wanted to run Breach. I forget. I told like the crew. I was like, I wanted to run Breach because it was like an important card that's not an instant or sorcery that I need to recur. And then I was like, well, I have Mana Geyser in the deck. I wasn't running Jessica's Well. But the fact that I had Geyser in it meant that I'm not going to be running Breach. And out of the two, I guess we could talk about Mana Geyser as well.
Toss it in there.
I think Mana Geyser is a problem. I feel like it is a card that overshadows your deck because, again, there's no need to build around it. Like, yes, it gets a little bit better if you can, like, fork it, if you're in, like, a Spellslinger deck, but I feel like it's just too easy to generate obscene amounts of mana just by casting the spell that, like, you could just throw in any red deck. Whereas, like, I don't know, Breach, I honestly would kind of avoid it unless I really need to recur specific things in like mono red, or I am playing high power of rituals. I honestly don't think Breach is that good if you don't have like fast mana or rituals or something to like, you know, actually chain together like a stupidly long turn.
So if you...
Krim does not agree.
I see Krim shaking his head over there. But you would choose Mana Geyser out of the two. If you had to just choose one of them to be more overshadowing, you would go with Mana Geyser over Breach?
I would go with the Geyser,
What about you, Krim? Are you fully team Breach? What do you think about Tomer's take?
I think that Breach allows you to break anything, right? Like any card that ever comes out will always be broken because Breach exists. Just because, example, if I can get it back, I can do something again, whether it's an infinite ritual spell, anything at all, I think it is very easy to just break Breach. And, like there is no effort with Breach. There is not really much of a cost. So I think that even if you ban Mana Geyser, something else will come along.
This is a tough one. I feel like I agree with Tomer in theory. I agree with Tomer in theory that I don't think Underworld Breach, if you actually don't have any rituals, don't have any synergies for it, it's probably fine, right? It kind of actually ends up being like a regrowth type effect or something, or a double regrowth, or an Eternal Witness, which I think is fine. My concern is just like you need some really serious self-discipline to pull that off, because so many of the red staples happen to be like Jessica's Will and Mana Geyser, and they're cards that just like I think people naturally just put in their decks without even thinking about how well they synergize together, and then they end up just winning the game by accident. So I think if you have Tomer's level of discipline where you're like, oh, I have Jessica's Will, I have Mana Geyser in this deck, so I'm not going to run Underworld Breach, I think it can probably work. But if you don't have that level of discipline, I think you end up with a lot of Richard games where you just accidentally end up winning with this like almost random combo without even trying.
Yeah, I think Will and Geyser are the two main ones for red, at least. I guess if you're in like black, you can go like Dark Ritual and stuff like that. But like if we're talking just red, I don't know. Like that's why like either I'm running Geyser and Will when I'm playing more high powered, or I'm running like maybe I honestly, if I don't have the rituals, I don't even consider Breach unless like I really need like an enchantment back or something in red. But yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe I just don't run enough Breach. Who knows?
Speaking of black cards, my pick, and then we're gonna do a lightning round to wrap things up. So get our last lightning round pick figured out. But my pick is actually kind of a group of cards, and these are cards I used to play really heavily. And now I only play in decks where I feel like they fit the theme. Like, I actually played them in a deck recently because it was built around the theme of the deck. But these cards are Grey Merchant of Asphodel, Exsanguinate, Termina Hailfire. They're these black spells. And I actually would probably focus more on Exsanguinate and Grey Merchant. I think that Termina Hailfire is kind of a finisher. It's just, like, kind of an annoying finisher because it's only interactable with counter spells. But Exsanguinate and Grey Merchant, these are two black cards that see a lot of play. Grey Merchant's 5 mana for a 2/4. You drain your opponents equal to your devotion to black, and you gain life equal to life lost this way. So you gain 3 times as much life because each of your opponents getting drained. Exsanguinate has essentially the same wording. For double black and X, you drain everyone for X, you gain life equal to life lost that way. And these are cards that I used to play just as like good black cards, right? If I'm building a mono black deck, I just play Exsanguinate and Gary because I'm like, I want some incidental life gain. They can damage my opponents. Think of all the life I'll gain. They're really good at what they do. But then I found out that there's a lot of games where that card by itself just ended up taking over the game, either because it just actually killed the table or killed multiple people at the table with the drain itself, or because it didn't quite kill everyone, but it put them very low on life, and I gained like 40 life or 60 life, and then I just, you know, kind of flicked everyone over and won the game. So I feel like it just overshadowed what my deck was trying to do. Instead of being about whatever my aristocrat synergies or reanimation synergies or whatever my theme was with my black deck, instead, it was just like, oops, I drew this one card, and I guess I win the game because I drew this one card. And I think that's kind of what I'm looking for in cards that overshadow your deck. I will say I still play them in specific decks if I'm like a devotion deck or if I'm specifically like a life loss, life gain style deck. I'm not anti these cards. I don't think they're like too busted to ever play or whatever. But I have tried to avoid playing them in just every black deck as staples because I think they end up taking away from decks more than they add to it a lot of times. But where are you guys at with Gary and Exsanguinate?
I think Gary is the one that is too good. I think Gary, every time, because it's a creature, you can reanimate it, you can flicker it. And like so many times, I've just seen Gary come down and it just becomes a game of Gary, right? Like, and the devotion count doesn't have to be high. We're talking like Gary plus like 3, just 5. That's enough. That is already enough. And I don't know. I've started to just drop Gary from my deck. I love Gary, don't get me wrong, but I've dropped him because every time it's too easy. I get bored of this card.
I admit that it's, I don't know if it's overshadowed. I guess it is. I still very much like Gary. And I play it in my Jadar deck, but it's a drain deck. So it's not overshadowing.
Yeah.
It's just, yeah, of course, how I kill you. It's like, you want to die to 100 Sephiroth triggers or just
one quick and easy?
I mean, it makes sense there, right? Like, I would play it in a drain deck as well. But, like, I mean, Gary's good enough to play generically.
Yeah, but only mono black, right? Like, you play it in
two colors sometimes.
I play it in two colors. There might be some two color decks. It kind of depends, but mostly mono black.
I'm with Krim that I think Gary's a lot stronger. Because it is a creature, you can reanimate it. The devotion cat doesn't need to be that high. It's only 5 mana always. I think, is it 5 mana? It's 4.
Yeah, it's 5 mana.
It's 5.
Comes with 2 devotion.
And yeah, I think, yeah, pumps for 2 devotion by itself. I think it's really good, but like that's it. I still run it. I don't think it's, I never consider it like overshadowing because like, I don't know, every single time I'm making a black deck, it literally is a drain deck. I don't know. I think I made one deck that was black that was not a drain deck, and that was Toshiro. And it still wins with Torment of Hailfire and Exsanguinate, so I guess it is a drain deck.
Yeah, I guess it is.
So it's just like, I don't know, like, if I'm mono black, I'm doing that already. This is Black is a very one note thing. So I just jam it. It feels like Craterhoof. It's like, all right, I'm a green deck. I have creatures. I want to kill you with creature combat. I need an overrun. What's the best overrun?
Yeah.
It's Craterhoof. Is it a little bit boring? For sure. Like sometimes I don't want to have the best option. I want to go for something more synergistic, but I don't feel like it overshadows it. It's just like, I don't want to have the easiest option. So I want to go for something else more chill. But like Exsanguinate, it's like, okay, if you do X equals 5, that's 7 mana to drain everybody for 5, and then you gain what?
15? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's 7 mana to do that? Yeah. Whatever. Like, okay, sure.
But what if I got Cabal Coffers and it's like 20 mana, and then I'm gaining like 60, and each are taking 18 or something.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, maybe they're playing more Exsanguinates. I thought it was being nice.
It's like Doppelgang. If you have all the mana, it's very good.
Again, the problem is I would always point, like, this is like also the Breach thing is like the problem wasn't Exsanguinate. The problem was like Cabal Coffers is a really good card. And it's like, we've seen so many commander clashes where like you or like, I don't know, me or whatever, we'll have like a Cabal Coffers out and we have like, oh, I tap for 16. Wow, this is very difficult. And it's like, that is the problem. Not the X spell.
And
that spell is fine.
But that's why Gary is the problem, because Gary doesn't need coffers.
Yes. Yeah. Gary doesn't need the coffers.
Right.
Gary is much easier to set up.
Yeah.
But like an X spell, it's Cabal Coffers. If you want it more chill, just the Cabal Coffers overshadowing. Maybe we should put Cabal Coffers on the list.
But I can never cut Cabal Coffers, Tomer. That is
my card draw. Am I right?
Is my yes. If I'm not card drawing and ramping, what game am I even playing? It's not Commander.
It's X spell that's the problem. When I make 18 mana with my Cabal Coffers, then the Exsanguinate is a problem.
Well, I think they can be overshadowing, but I could be wrong. Let's do one lightning round here before we wrap things up today. Let's start back at the top of the order. Tomer, give us one more overshadowing card.
We'll put these two together. No, I'll just Rift Ecstatic Smothering Tide. You know what the cards do. I feel like, they overshadow it because they do the thing way too well. They're very generic. You don't have to build around it whatsoever. You just cast a spell, and they're 3 mana and 4 mana respectively. And Rhystic Study, just the entire game becomes Rhystic Study of the game. Smothering Tithe, you don't even need to ask people if they want to pay the 2 usually, because people can't pay the 2 really, and also function. So you just have infinite mana for free without working on it. We know these cards. We don't like them.
They also quite literally overshadow like the narrative of the game, the discussion of the game, the conversation, because it's a constant.
Do you pay the one? Do you pay the two?
I think like in some ways are even worse than the rest of the cards with the way they overshadow the game. But I'm glad we brought them up. That's a good pick. Phil, what do you got for another overshadowing card?
Okay, so the card that I would choose here, another card that I play and like to play, is Eerie Ultimatum. Return any number of permanent cards with different names from your graveyard to the battlefield. Just straight up reanimates your entire graveyard. Awful to resolve, just like Mizzix Mastery. And then you usually, hopefully, win, because otherwise you untap with way too much stuff to keep in mind. Same with Rise of the Dark Realms. I still play Eerie Ultimatum, because if I play Abzan, I want to get paid off for playing it. It's like Ruinous Ultimatum. You gotta play it. Rise of the Dark Realms, I don't play anymore. I play Sheodrit instead. Because at least she has to flip and do a bunch of things.
Yeah.
Both of them are just a lot of mana, and then you kinda get like insane value. It's like a what's the Genesis wave for like 100, but it's less setup and feels a little worse, I think. All of them are almost impossible to actually resolve.
Yeah, those cards are so brutal. They're so brutal. Just so much value for one card, and it makes it feel like the whole rest of the game doesn't really matter, right? Because whoever casts that one card ends up winning the game a lot of times. But Krim, what do you got?
I'm gonna go with Necropotence. So Necropotence is a classic. It's a house. I'm surprised not, you know, played more, because is it even a game changer?
It is a game changer.
It is now. Oh, okay. It wasn't originally, I think, right? And then they updated it to add it maybe, but yeah.
Because they put Adenos instead, and I'm like,
right,
what?
Yeah. Good. Because this thing is busted, right? Like, I am always just surprised. Like, when you play Necropotence, if you are shocked that that overshadows the rest of your deck, I'm going to tell you why it does that. And it's because, well, are you surprised you drew the combo? Right? Are you like, oh my God, I drew all my cards that I wanted to do? Well, you had Necropotence, so you may as well just tutored whatever you wanted and put it into your hand, right? On top of that, every time Necropotence has hit the board, I tried it just to see, because I'm like, I remember one podcast way back, I talked about how good it was, if it's still good, if it still deserves the hate. Immediately, as soon as you play it, the conversation is, okay, well, he can draw whatever he wants, and so we need to hit him, and we now need to reduce his life total. And even if, like, and I've had friends who play it, and they didn't even have anything in hand to back up all the hate that Necropotence would bring to them, and the whole conversation is just Necropotence this, Necropotence that. I need to get that Necropotence player out of here. So no matter which way it is, I think this will always overshadow the table, because if they don't, A, they'll lose, and then you just, you know, it's a free win, right? Or everyone beats down the Necropotence player immediately.
Yeah.
100% no, agree.
I agree on that one, too. Necro, also very overshadowing. Right. Well, for my last pick, I'm just going to put it out there. It's not even one card. It's a type of card. And that's Stax Pieces. And I think we saw that on a past season of Commander Clash, where we have a random, like, even a light Stax piece comes down, and the whole conversation is just about the Stax piece and why I can't do anything and why I can't cast this card. But I think, like, this doesn't mean you shouldn't play those cards, but I think there is, like, if you humility lock the table and then win the game.
Oh my God.
You won with humility, right? Like, that's why you won the game. Or if you drop the Rest in Peace against the graveyard deck and they can't cast anything, it's really Rest in Peace that won you the
different
game. Not the...
That's a bit different.
But yeah, okay. Maybe that's a bit of a stretch. But I think the Stax Pieces
humility
can be overshadowing that that way, where you can drop one card that just essentially makes your opponent do nothing. And I know this from experience, because this is the Modern against the Odds trick, where you drop a Blood Moon against your opponent, and then that buys you like 10 turns to do the janky win con. Yes, it's cool, and it makes a good video because I won with some janky combo. But if you really think about it for 5 seconds, I kind of just won by playing a turn 3 Blood Moon, and that's really, when it comes down to it, that actually is the card that won me the game. So I think that's just something to be conscious of. Sometimes cards like that can take over a game to such a great extent that it overshadows the rest of what you're trying to do.
Yeah, I wonder what the line is, though. Like, is Spider Woman across the line?
It's so tough, because it's also so contextual and matchup based, right? Like, you can drop the Planar Void against some tables and it does nothing, and then you can drop it against the Reanimator deck and it totally overshadows the rest of how that game's gonna play.
I had Dothy Voidwalk on my list because it hates and stuff, but then it also has this tap ability that sometimes just casts an Emrakul for free.
Yep.
That also feels like, oh yeah, I didn't do anything here. And then I host the table. Everything is about this card. Was it Dothy Voidwalker? For sure a Leyline, but I think also a Voidwalker that hosts every other deck on the
table. It was Leyline this past season, I played my control deck, and I just did not know.
Everyone.
But, like, that's so funny, because, like, Leyline of the Void hosts the table, and I didn't know Phil had a turn 2 Ren into a fetch land, right? Like, it's not my fault.
My Common Welder got annihilated.
Anyway,
that's a good point, though.
Yeah, just something to consider. But let us know what you all think. Have you ever run into any cards that can overshadow your deck? What do you think of our picks? Are we insane? Are they on base? Let us know about that in the comments, too. And we'll be back next week to do it all again and talk some more Commander. So until then, have a great week, everyone. And this is the crew signing out.